It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Brought to you in part by Trailer Sales Alabama. A great selection of high-quality trailers at great prices. Financing available. Trailer Sales Alabama on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Now, with reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast, here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, and welcome to Trailer Sales of Alabama, brand new sponsor here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. And by the way, side note too, Trailer Sales of Alabama, they are a part of, not supposed to tell the whole story yet, but there is this next great showcase we have coming with the radio station, big prize giveaway. I'm getting myself in trouble. It includes something really awesome from Trailer Sales of Alabama. And then there'll be something sitting on top of the trailer. Well, I think it's too embargoed. I'm probably in trouble. Listen, there is
probably going to be a spare tire.
Yeah, that's probably right. Yeah, there's an incredibly cool package coming your way. If you are an outdoorsman, you're going to be blown away with what this package looks like and your chance to win it coming up this fall. Well, it's awesome. It's awesome.
Now, where are they located?
Trailer Sales of Alabama. They're out 90, and you can just Google them, get the address there, and they have a full selection of that, and also they have Yellowhammer kayaks. So we'll talk more about that coming up in just a second, because we are going to talk some fishing. And this guy is, to get him to put the rod down long enough to talk to us, we got to make sure our time is used accurately and is to its best measure when we talk to Captain Wayne Miller and check in on the Bass Fishing Report. Hey, Wayne.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Man, we're great.
Been a little while, Wayne.
Yeah, it really has. But, man, been doing some great fishing, Mike. I hope you and Sean have been out there and gotten in on some of this.
Yeah, but we're on the other end of the spectrum. You're 60 miles inshore, we're 60 miles offshore.
Yeah.
But it is time. I mean, it's this time of year, too. I don't care if you're a hardened offshore fisherman. You start thinking about that fall fishing in the Mobile Tensaw Delta. This is something you're doing year-round. And I got to tell you, you say fall fishing, it's been hotter than blazes, but looking at your pictures, you are on fish like it was October.
Yeah, you know, Sean, it's really, it's been the last really 2-3 weeks have been phenomenal. I mean, it's a lot of people are still fishing, you know, standard summertime patterns up on the middle and upper delta, and I've even done really well up, you know, some trips up on the Tom Bigby in Alabama. But you know, the real story for, you know, South Alabama right now is, and anybody that's been out on these rivers, when you go out on that Mobile and see that green tent to the water, you know what's going on, buddy. And it's
the shrimp are coming in.
And, you know, the water, the rivers are beautiful. And, the fish have just really responded well. Now, you know, catching tremendous numbers of, you know, bass on, I've been doing quite a few live bait trips, and we've been doing really well on them. But, you know, catching them all artificial, too. But you've seen a lot of redfish, but now the specks, I hadn't seen them. So, catching a few here and there, but they've been fairly small. But the bass bite has just really been fantastic.
Yeah, you're talking about the specks, and we're going to get into that on future shows. The reports I'm getting, they're not too far south of the causeway. They're catching some the north end of the bay. As always, I'm interested in those redfish, but I am interested in those green fish too. So let's talk about this. I want to break down two things you've mentioned. You talked about fishing up the river, Alabama, Tom Bigby. You know that gets my attention, so I want to address that in a little bit. First, though, let's talk about this beginning of the shrimp bite on the causeway for bass, and then kind of walk us through what you're doing right now. I mean, there's a whole bunch of delta out there just saying, okay, well, they're the shrimp are in the delta. Somebody who doesn't do this all the time like you says, okay, but how do I find the bass?
Yeah, well, you know, there's a couple of real keys right now, because you have to remember now the water temperature is still, you know, up there. We're not in late October, November. I mean, where you can just, where you literally can pretty much close your eyes and throw a shrimp anywhere and catch a fish of some description. We're not at that point yet. So, you know, what I found, even with the live shrimp, I mean, on the bass, it's really largely dependent on the current. You have to have some current. And, you know, the reason I say that is, and the reason you see that come into play is if you watch what these shrimp do when they come in, you can go in these real shallow bays where they load up, you know, those shrimp will get. Well, on a high tide, you can go in there and you'll see very few shrimp. And it's because they're all up in that grass. I mean, they're up buried up in that stuff. Well, as soon as that current starts pulling hard and, you know, you got an outgoing tide and that water drops down, it pulls those shrimp out. I mean, you'll actually, in some of the channels, you know, it'll be like watching, you know, blue crabs float by you. You know, every now and then you'll see a shrimp. Well, when you see them like that, you know, the current's pulling them. And, you know, they're typically, you know, I mean, they're not by themselves. They're in, you know, there's large groups of them. But, you know, that gets the bait moving, and that's when the bass really turn on. And, again, you have to remember, you know, what you're, you know, what you're going after, and it's a bass. And what he loves to do or she loves to do more than anything else is ambush something. So, you know, places, you know, in the mouths of ditches, you know, anywhere on banks where you've got outside swing and you've got a log or, you know, anything that, you know, those fish can get behind just to ambush, you know, that bait as it comes by. And man, you know, I mean, typically it's in the, a little bit later, you know, like late September, October, before we get those situations where you can set up on a log and catch, you know, 30, 40 fish. Well, guess what? It's already happening.
Wow. Well, man. And when you talk
about... Well, it's caused the bait.
Yeah, and you're talking about current. I want to go back to one thing, though. You talk about current being important, but then you said, you know, at a full tide, you can't find those, but as a tide drops. So it sounds like you're keying on a fallen tide.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, and, you know, right now, I mean, you know, the difference in that and what we've had here lately is we've had, you know, incoming tide in the morning and outgoing tide in the afternoon. Now, I've had some trips in the morning where you go out and you might catch, you know, 10, 12 fish, you know, and then you go in the afternoon and you may catch 40 to 50 fish.
I'm going in the afternoon.
Yeah. Whenever that tide's falling.
It's a scenario where you really got to pay attention to what's going on with the water. And, you know, I'm not saying you can't set up and catch fish, you know what I mean, but you're not going to really, you know, just, and you've been, you know, I mean, both of you guys have got enough time on this Delta. Y'all been on those trips where it's just, you know, it's absolutely incredible. I mean, you just
they've been with you.
After fish.
They've been with you when I've done that. Okay, so quickly before we got a couple minutes left here. And rigging, you're just for shrimp fishing, you're just rigging a cork, or how you setting up?
Yeah, I'm just using a cork, you know, and, you know, a little small, you know, live bait. You know, you can use a kale hook and, you know, just putting a split shot on there, depending on how much current I've got, you know, just to make sure I keep the bait down. And, you know, I mean, it's a real simple rig, inexpensive. You know, there's nothing fancy about it, but, man, it just works like a champ. And, you know, used to, you saw a lot of people that would target bass with live shrimp that would utilize treble hooks. Well, number one, they hang into everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not good around wood. And, you know, I mean, and not only that, I mean, they're fairly expensive compared to just, you know, a regular small, like, kale live bait hook. So, but that's the way I rig them and just use a split shot. Like I say, depending on the current and the depth that I'm fishing, I may go a little heavier on it. But, you know, the neat thing, you know, irregardless of, you know, what size split shot you put on there, if you drop a shrimp in there on a on a bank, you know, adjacent to a piece of cover, he's going to let you know pretty quick if there's a fish there, because he's going to boogie. He's either going to try to get away from it or come to the surface. And, you know, I love to watch them when they come to the surface and do that little circle of death.
Yeah. that's a sure sign there's something down there that
yeah,
he don't
really
like.
Is, Mike.
also, a shark circling him.
Yeah.
Oh, green shark. What about if you were going to throw artificials right now, what would you be throwing?
You know, I'm still doing, you know, doing fairly well with crankbaits and some spinnerbaits out in the main river. And from the standpoint of plastic, you know, just any, you know, ribbon tail or curl tail worm and like a June bug. You know, June bug has been the primary color I've been throwing. But, man, this watercolor in the main rivers right now is just absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, there's other colors you can throw, obviously. You know, watermelon chartreuse is another good color. But, you know, just tequila sunrise has been really good. You know, it's just kind of what you've got confidence in right now with this water being as clear and as pretty as it is. I think you can, you know, take just about any worm color and go out there and catch some.
All right. Hey, Captain Wayne, can you hold on a second? We got to run to the break because you mentioned up the river fishing. As a guy that has a little camp house on the Tom Bigby River, I'm real interested, okay?
All right.
Coming right back with more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, brought to you in part by Trailer Sales of Alabama. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along. And by the way, too, on the show today, we are going to go back offshore. Scott Bannon, Marine Resources, joins us here in just a little bit to talk about three more days of snapper in October.
Good.
Plus, we got to talk about planting and dove hunting. Teal season opened this morning, so lots of stuff going on.
Deer season right around the corner.
And at the same time.
And the corn sales are up.
I guarantee you they're up. And while that's going on, our buddy Captain Wayne Miller does what he does every day. And
he's out there catching all the fish.
He's going to catch all those
every
bass,
day.
And those redfish and those speckled trout. Captain Wayne, you mentioned when you first started talking about what you've been doing over the last few weeks, and we got done talking about the causeway fishing, that shrimp bite on the causeway, but you mentioned, you messed up and mentioned and sent me some pictures of some up-the-river bass. And you know, when you send me pictures of spots and big largemouths up on the big rivers, you got my attention. Captain,
I think I saw your camp in the background, Sean.
Yeah. Well, you know, Sean, it's something that a lot of people don't think about, you know, especially, you know, in September, you know, August, late August and early September is, you know, everybody knows, man, it's just miserable hot. And, you know, they think, well, the rivers up there, you know, get not really stagnant, but you know, I mean, it's just that river bite gets pretty tough, especially during the heat of the day. And but one thing that a lot of people don't clue on is looking at those river stages, because a couple of weeks ago when I went up, man, my son and I went up, and we had 3 days we spent up there on the Tom. And what we saw, though, prior to the trip, and actually, my son picked up on it, and he called me and said, "Look, we need to get up and get in on this." But the Tom had a little bit of a rise on it, and then it had they projected a slow fall, and this was about a 5 foot fall over 3 days. Now, anybody that knows anything about fishing those rivers up there, you don't want them rising fast. You don't really want to go up there and fish this time of year on the rise. And you sure don't want them falling out, you know, just extremely fast. But when you're talking about that kind of fall over a, you know, a 3-4 day period, man, that gets your attention.
Got and good water movement.
I mean, that's phenomenal water movement. So, you know, and during the same time, the water will clean up quite a bit. Now, you know, the biggest challenge associated with going up there and trying to catch those fish when it gets like that is with the water falling, the bait and the fish move quite a bit. But, man, the neat thing is if you just keep pounding, when you find them, oh, man, it's game on. It's like fishing, you know, ditches on a fall.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the bait, you know, you may hit two or three, you know, ditch mouths or pockets that have, you know, a lot of wood cover, and you may not do anything, but then you may hit a couple of them that are literally just loaded up, and you can really smash a fish. Now, you know, you'll go out the next day, and the water's falling another foot, foot and a half, and that spot may not be good again, but you just have to keep moving and checking other ones. But you got a lot of visual clues, too, because you can look, you know, and you can, a lot of times you can see that bait being active. You can, you know, watch your birds. I mean, there's a lot of visual clues that you can use up those rivers. You know, just tool along kind of easy cruising and, you know, really pay attention to your surroundings. And, you know, if something looks right, or, I mean, there's a lot of places we caught fish up there on the Tom that I typically wouldn't ever even stop and fish. But, you know, we saw birds on it, and we'd pull up there, and sure enough, there'd be bait. And, man, we, next thing I know, we're whacking some of those beautiful spots that I sent you pictures of.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that, so you're saying.
Now it's on Tom Bigby?
Yeah, on the Tom, Mike.
Awesome, man. Awesome.
You see, you've got both Mike and I's attention with spotted bass. Okay, so first thing people take away here. That you the fall was important, but it was the fact that the fall was not a very fast fall. It was a slow fall, right?
Yeah.
So we're looking for that. If people are watching the gauges, should they watch Leroy or watch what would you watch for that?
Well, I mean, you can watch the Coffeyville reading,
okay?
You know, and see what they project on it. And you also have to keep in mind that those are literally their projections. Can they change? Yes,
sure.
And they do all the time. But if you hit it right, you know, man, you can just absolutely, you know, really slay. You know, the great thing about all that fishing that we did for those 3 days up there, I think we saw one other bass boat up there fishing.
Yeah. Wow. Well, now, let's get back to the spots.
Yeah, that's what I want to talk about, both kind of spots, though. Both kind of spots, the spotted bass, and then how you said there was there no rhyme or reason to the spots where you caught them?
Well, that's why, you know, when he triggered me there when he said he saw the bait.
Word.
But it's a place that he doesn't normally would think about fishing. So I immediately say, you're fishing a sandbar.
Well, yeah, you are correct, Mike. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And every swing you get on that river, guess what you're going to have?
A point on the sandbar.
That's it, buddy.
There you go, buddy.
You know, and it's...
It don't take me long, Wayne. I'll figure you out after a while, boy.
I know you
just mention one word here, one word there. But let me tell you, here's a difference between a long time ago when I was really hardcore bass fishing. I thought that was going to be my life forever. There was no shad up there. I'm talking about I never, ever saw a shad up there, ever. And now you can go up there and, man, the shad are just everywhere.
Yeah.
There's more bait up there than bass. The bass literally ought to be, if the Delta bass would grow to 15 pounds, there ought to be 15 pounders everywhere up there because there's more bait than I have ever seen in my life up there with these shad.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, a lot of people don't like to catch them, but, you know, we got into a couple of spots where we were catching stripers. And, man, I mean, it was just, we caught some line stretchers there, buddy.
Yeah.
So you know, I mean, there's a lot, you know, and we talk about this all the time on the show. And you know, for people that don't travel and fish a lot, you know, they probably don't appreciate the diversity of our fishery here. But, man, we're so blessed to have the opportunity to fish, you know, everything that we fish for down here on the south end. And at the same time, you can mix in these day trips that you can go up on the Tom in Alabama mm-hmm. and catch these phenomenal spotted bass.
And striped bass.
Yeah, I'm into all that.
Yeah.
And before we run out of time, though, okay, because both of y'all are inside baseball on this, and the river fishing is new to me, even though I got a place right there.
I shouldn't have mentioned that a while ago.
I love the idea of fishing on the river. A lot of sandbars by me. But if somebody's looking, you went to that sandbar because you saw bait, right? Because you normally wouldn't key on that. What would you, if you didn't see bait, okay, and you're cruising the river, and you're trying to break down a section, just a random section of the Tom Bigby or the Alabama, what are you looking for? Where are you starting? Where do you even get started? It's so much bank.
If you don't see a visual clue from the standpoint of bait, you know, probably the easiest and the quickest way to start catching some fish is to go to the creek mouths, you know. But there again, you have to keep in mind, not every creek mouth is going to have, you know, fish on it. But there are times when, you know, depending on the depth of the water, you know, right in front of the creek mouth, you know, they may be up in the mouth of the creek. They may be out on the drop. So, you know, they may be downstream. They can be upstream. So it's, you know, a scenario where, you know, if you don't have any visual clues with bait or fish busting, you just got to pull up there and start working it and try to pick that apart. But a ditch mouth on the main rivers is always a great starting point.
All right, Captain Wayne.
Because, you know, it'll also help clue you in on what baits, you know, they'll bite, because you can try several different color crankbaits, spinner baits, top water, and, you know, you get an idea about, you know, what they'll really target.
Captain Wayne, tell folks how to get a trip booked with you.
They can reach me at 251-455-7404.
As always, thank you, Wayne. Appreciate it. Get back after it, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, guys. Have a great one.
Will do. Captain Wayne Miller checking in, and then we'll take it offshore. Here in a second, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, joins us, and I get questions. It seems like every time I'm out somewhere, get stopped in the grocery store, people ask me, what's that thing you're doing to plant, that mowing and throwing and I'll talk about that.
Throwing and mowing and growing and mowing
and doing all that stuff. Yeah, we'll be right back.
Kitchen and...
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors, brought to you in part by Trailer Sales Alabama, brand new sponsor of the show. Welcome aboard. And like I teased earlier in the show, something very cool coming your way that's based around one of those great trailers from Trailer Sales Alabama. We'll give you more details in the weeks to come, but you're going to love this. It's going to be an amazing prize package coming your way. All right, this is maybe the latest as of recent. I've been talking to my friend Scott Bannon, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, about snapper fishing. October? Scott, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Well, hey. It looks like we're going to fish a few days in October. Whether that's what we intended at the beginning of the season or not, that's where we are. And some people are excited about it for some potential cooler weather. I'm excited about it because we're managing red snapper how we said we would, and that we would fish to our quota. And so we still have some quota left, so we're going to give the anglers of Alabama an opportunity to go catch them.
Hi, Scott. So what happens if October... the 1st of October, the weather's bad. What are we going to do then?
Mike, why do you want to do that?
Because I know it's going to happen. I know it's going to happen.
Potentially. Matter of fact, we chose early in October partially due to typical weather patterns that, you know, we start getting into those windy days later in the year. And we will have, unless it's just another hurricane coming, there will be some effort. Even on Labor Day weekend, some people did go fish. People that have bigger boats, and I guess people that are just mad at those fish, they went. And so we did have some landings. And
What kind of effort did you have?
It was relatively low. I want to say it was probably about 8,000 pounds or so. So compared to a weekend where we normally catch 30-plus thousand pounds per day.
Well,
you know,
even 8,000 pounds, pretty impressive. It was spotty. It was kind of rough sometimes and kind of calm other times.
A few folks that went early on Saturday said they kind of got out there before the wind really got to them, and it wasn't too bad, but the forecast was a little bit challenging. So most people, I think, did their due diligence and said, you know, I'm not going to risk it. And
that's what I did.
That's me. Yeah, yeah, I stayed on the island. Didn't I think we got the kayaks out and went around the house there. Just joining us, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannett. Let me go back for a second for people who have not followed this the whole time and explain what you're saying about fishing to the quota. This is an example of state management. Because I mean, you said, oh, the season originally could have been over by the end of July, and then we had days that we couldn't fish, so we got those days for Labor Day. And that, so explain how that works, like the quota and the days and all that stuff.
Sure. So under 2018 and 2019, we were fishing for red snapper under an exempted fishing permit issued from NOAA. That means that we were able to set the season. And we had an allocation. We requested a certain percentage of the total allowable catch in the Gulf of Mexico, and it was around 25%. It was granted. Each of the Gulf states had a plan, and we just could not exceed 100% of the quota for the Gulf. So we had a really good plan moving forward. The states chose their seasons. Ours, we use Snapper Check to monitor the data. It's a fairly real-time program, so within a few days of each weekend, because we were open for long weekends this year, we're able to determine what the effort was and potentially do we add days, or like in 2018, the season, the weather was really, really good, and the people got to fish at a pretty high rate, and we ended up closing early this year, more typical weather patterns. We're fishing to about 1 million pounds. That's kind of where our quota is, and so we're shy of that 1 million pounds. So we opened extra days in August, and then we opened some days for Labor Day weekend, and unfortunately the weather was very challenging for that weekend. So we're going to open the 4th, 5th, and 6th of October and give some anglers the opportunity to go help achieve that quota. And most likely after that, we'll be done for the year, because we don't want to get into an overfishing status.
Well, and that's what people need to understand. While the state management, what y'all are seeing here is state management versus federal management. That just used to say it's open for these days, and that's it.
That's right.
This is a lot more nimble what y'all are doing, and to be commended. We appreciate it.
And it's responsive to our anglers. And you know, there were some questions about why we chose that first weekend in October. And you know, anglers are generally outdoor people, and a lot of them, they hunt, they fish, they do a variety of outdoor things. That weekend kind of fell in between some other outdoor seasons for teal season, dove season, bow season for deer doesn't start until the next weekend. So we don't want to rob from one activity to help the other. And then other people just choose to say, you know what, I've fished for the year, I'm comfortable with what I've fished. And we also looked at, we'd like some cooler weather to try and fish. So that's why we kind of skipped the rest of September, and maybe that first weekend in October it'll be a little cooler, a little more comfortable out there.
Yeah, it's, I mean, right now, anything you could do to get some cooler weather, I'm on board with.
I would think right now a majority of the people, once Labor Day is over with, I mean, a lot of people put their boats up. I mean, they getting in a different gear. So you won't see the effort on the October the 4th, 5th, and 6th that you would see in the first week of August or something.
I think you're correct. And that was one of the reasons why we wanted to put the press release out pretty quickly after that Labor Day weekend, when we decided that there was still going to be some fish left over, so that people did not, if they wanted to, they didn't go ahead and winterize their boats or put the cover on it and put it in storage, that they, if they choose to, hey, let's keep it ready for another couple of weeks and we'll give it a shot. Or, like you said, I think people will pretty well be done at this point for the large numbers. There are people that will always go if you give them the opportunity, and we understand that too.
It's an amazing place we live to think about. I mean, anybody else from other parts of the country realize that other than maybe December through February is pretty chilly and all that. But other than that, yeah, windy days. But we have, I mean, Gulf fishing year-round, but we just, around here, we have so many other things to do. We're like, okay, well, that's I'm going to not do that for, you know, 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
It's
the
pretty
winter,
amazing.
The winter tuna fishing is off the chart good, you know? But me and you're not hardly going to go. We're deer hunting.
That's right.
You know, so you can't do it all. There's just no way.
You're correct, and we understand that. And again, that's why the season will probably just come to an end at that point in October. And next year, we're under full-time state management. It'll be will have completed all the requirements under the federal rules to have a state season, and then we manage not only the state season, we could adjust things like the size limit and the bag limit. We'll be very, very careful about making those kind of changes because it really changes the dynamics of how the seasons go. Most people have been very comfortable now. We're seeing big fish, you know, we're seeing a fair number of days. So we don't want to, we just need to be very careful of how we go forward with any of those other changes. But we're going to look at these last two seasons and kind of compare the data. Our chief biologist, Kevin Anson, has got a fantastic little weather calculator and for effort. It's a pretty interesting tool that we can kind of add in some typical weather and what the effort has been for that kind of weather, and it tells us how many pounds of fish people have been catching on average. So we're going to really look at next season pretty hard.
Well, this is good. Awesome. Yeah, and I know that I got a lot more to talk with you about for inshore species and that on a show coming up very soon. So you'll be able to join us again for that, I hope.
Absolutely.
All right, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. Thank you, man.
Thank you, Scott. Guys. Thank you for the opportunity.
All right, coming right back, and we will shift gears because we've got to talk about, you know, you heard Scott mention dove season. All right, teal season and planting season.
Yes.
Throw and mow and go and do re mi and all that stuff.
Whatever it is.
It's all on the way.
Season too.
That's right. Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have y'all here. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, and a big welcome to Trailer Sales Alabama, new sponsor, part of the show. All right, I'm going to shift gears for a second here.
For fishing to what?
To hunting.
Oh, okay. I guess that just came in, didn't it?
So you
went dove hunting?
Last weekend, North Zone opener. Went Sunday afternoon. When I finally came out of my funk, I was sick for couple days, but I really wasn't well, but I wanted to go shoot doves, so I pulled it together on Sunday.
Yeah, I asked you to go fishing with me, but you were too sick.
I was too sick.
But you wasn't too sick to go
so
dove
by
hunting.
Sunday
I
afternoon.
Remember that.
By Sunday afternoon, I was fine enough to go. I really wasn't fine enough, but I wasn't going to catch a cold because it was like 98, 99 degrees out there.
Yeah.
And we had some birds, just a small shoot, just a few of us shooting, you know, and not tons of birds, but enough that everybody went home with plenty of birds put on the grill.
That's good.
That was good, and hopefully, you know, to be frank with you, I was planning to shoot. We got a place we get to shoot here in Mobile County, and birds disappeared. So I'm probably going to go back up to Washington County.
Yeah, well, we're supposed to shoot this weekend up around Orville, and got a text yesterday and said no birds.
How does this happen when we haven't had a big front? Because I just lost my birds here too this week.
Yeah.
I mean, I had as of this time last weekend. It had come down some, but I still had around 100 using it. It's a small field, you know.
Yeah.
But I had enough that I was like, we'll have a shoot. And then by Monday, Tuesday, it was like I went back out there just fast, maybe 35 left. And then I was out there on Wednesday afternoon. I saw 5. anybody who puts on dove shoots or goes to, they realize this. This is why I tell everybody who, if they say, hey, can I shoot doves with you this year? I said, yes, when I have them.
Yeah.
But the idea, if just me, I know there's some places that are so consistent and so that they always have them, but I haven't. Sometimes the week before, you can feel like you're loaded with birds and then you got none. That can happen the day before a hunt. They can go that fast.
I was up in Central Nail about Tuesday this week, and I passed by a field that had just been hay.
So a lot of people cut hay this week.
Oh, man, the power lines was just loaded with doves. They were everywhere.
But
I mean,
it
must have been 100 birds on the power line right there, just one small power line.
Okay, so a bunch of guys cut hay. We still hadn't cut hay, unless it's we still hadn't cut hay. But a bunch of people around us have cut hay.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's always, you do a good low cut on hay and get, you know, and have a good baler and really get those fields clean, leaves a lot of seed down there. But there's another component to it that's unknown to us. It's the why, like earlier in the show, when Captain Wayne was talking about this brush pile on the river and this brush pile on the river and this one didn't have any fish and this one didn't have it. The third one had a bunch of fish.
Yeah.
There's some other thing that we don't know yet on that. Go right around and look at this. What you're saying is true. You'll go by a place just was hayed, round bales in the field, and they got doves lining the power line. You go 4 miles down the road, hayed, bales in there, not a dove.
Yeah, I don't.
It's not. There's some other. You got to have the Hayden Field, but there's some other component that I always look. I try to study this, being a bird hunter for so many years, and I always realize there's some unknown. In addition, you do all these things right, and that gets you to the party. But there's one other component that some places just hold birds
better
than others.
You're down a mile down the road, and there's a hay field.
Yeah, like, what do they do
birds
wrong?
Birds everywhere on the power lines. Yeah, I don't know. You would think that those residential birds that are living around there would
go
be
to that
there.
Field.
Yeah, but...
But they don't.
Yeah, I agree.
They're all over...
We've all been to dove hunts where it's happened that way.
And you look at... You've gone to a dove shoot, and you've gone somewhere, and you're like, this person did a great job.
Yeah.
Their fields... You know, I mean, look at this. They had millet growing here. They had sunflowers growing here.
Cornfield over there.
Yeah, they've dissed this. Yeah. They've bush hogged this. Everything looks perfect. And the birds are down the road in some other place.
I know it.
So you have to do the right thing. So that land managed for doves. And at some point in the year, I'll have them.
Yeah.
But it might. And like I said, I'm lucky, because I got another place to shoot. And I lose. Although I could ride out there this afternoon probably, and the birds might have showed back up. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's just a crapshoot when you go on a dove hunt.
That's for sure.
Most of the time, anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's when it goes from dove shoots to dove hunts.
Yeah.
Because you're not sure they're going to be there.
Or we're going to eat good. We're going to have a little party there.
That is true. All right. Speaking of hunting and working the ground, this is probably the question I get more when I get stopped at the grocery store or somebody or anywhere, if somebody listens to this show. People are coming to me and saying, you've talked about this thing you're doing with your fields. It's very different. You talk about mowing and not discing and all that. So let me tell you. So I have been educating myself over the last 4 years, 5 years. I'm no pro here, just a regular guy that's learned this. And the technique, there may be other names for it, but I call it throw and mow.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'll give you a quick synopsis of what throw and mow is and then tell you if you want to do this so you don't say, oh, I found out too late. I'll tell you what you should be doing right now. So first of all, throw and mow is the idea of not putting a disc in the ground using glyphosate, Roundup,
yeah.
And some mowing instead of disking. And if you think about it, soil builds from the top down, right? Things break down, leaves, pine straw, grass, all these things. Topsoil, by its definition, is top. Soil.
Yes.
So when we disc, we take and distribute all those nutrients down to where roots don't even get to them with the kind of plants we grow for deer patches, right? Yeah. It puts it way down. Also exposes the dirt to get dried out. The wind comes through and blows your dirt away. There's the good nutrients you have going. It rains, it gullies it and washes it out of a field.
Yeah.
So what I've gone to doing over the last 4 years, this will be year five, I guess, is unless I'm a dove field or a place that I'm putting corn or beans in or something. And there's actually guys getting success with beans too with this. But if I'm doing my deer patch stuff, I have fields that have not been dissed in 4 years.
Yeah.
Not in 4 years. Yeah. So the process takes some spraying and some bush hogging. And the quick run through is you'll have a field that's sprayed, killed back. You come in 7 to 14 days later when it's killed back. You are running through with a hopper. You know, however you do it for the four-wheeler, I've had tractor hopper. I'm spreading my seeds and my fertilizer at that point, okay? Yep. Just right into this dead grass.
Yeah.
Right in the dead grass. And then I'm coming through with the bush hog, dropping it low and bush hogging it. Now, after that point, I mean, sometimes if I got time or whatever, I drag a culture packer across it. But last year, I had no time, ran out of time, didn't have time to culture pack over the dead, and my fields were just as pretty as they ever were.
You don't know, because I can throw wheat seeds in the back of my truck, and it grows just fine.
So why? And it's not just true for wheat. That's true for a lot of different things we plant for deer patches. So why do we, best example, so why do we think we got to disc it in? Like my chufas, I disc in deep because they need disced in. But all the stuff we grow for deer patches will grow sitting in the back of your truck.
Yeah, I don't know what the mentality of that is.
It's an old farmer. It's before we had herbicides. I mean, I come from a farming family.
Yeah, I know what that's just what everybody has done forever and ever. But in reality, you don't have to do that. And I tell you, every year, and I don't know what it is, Sean, but I disc my fields. We've been doing it real lightly in the last couple of years, not doing that deep discing.
Yeah, big rolling it over. Yeah.
We just barely crack the ground up,
right.
And then we'll throw the seed out, and it'll come up just fine. But what I find is I go back in the spring, and all of my wheat that was there, and I saw it growing during deer season, the wheat and the oats, there is none there. But on the edges where we did not disc at all, I'm talking about none. The wheat and the oats are still growing out there.
Wow.
Now, that's on the edge. Now,
that's where you didn't even do the work. And less sunlight on the edge of a field.
And I don't know what the deal is on that. I mean, I have done a lot of hunting and dollar discing, a lot of planting throughout my life, and I can't figure this one out.
What makes a plant great? Sunshine and what comes through its roots.
Yes.
We can't control sunshine. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And God fertilizes. Our trees grow without us having to put fertilizer on them, all these things. That's because there's a topsoil buildup, and that's what we're doing here. So before we wrap up, and we got to get out of here, but we'll talk about this in depth next week. If you want to be on board doing what I'm doing, building topsoil, you got marginal soils like I do. I have built true black dirt topsoil in my fields, from sand to that. What you're doing right now is during the summer, I bush hog my fields just to move it along. But keep your fields below knee to thigh high. Get them bush hogged to that. Yeah. Then you're going to come through, spray with glyphosate. You're going to kill that patch. You're going to kill everything in that field. Okay? 7 to 14 days later, we'll get to that. But go ahead and spray them. 7 to 14 days later, we're going to come in and seed or whenever you want to. But right now, this month, you need to spray and kill those patches. All right?
We'll talk about some more next week.
All right. Prep Sports Report on the way next. See you.